Oh, slow moving this morning.
What?
Slow moving this morning. Oh, there you go. Hey, John.
Daddy wrote a poem for Marco.
What was it again? Some dog?
Daddy wrote a poem about the kids. So you just
Okay.
got here.
Tell her that there'll be room for this in the service. Okay. There'll be a section where we have people who care to comment or say something. So she can do that. Thank her for that too. She had mentioned that she was going to send it in a separate email. I guess you were the mailman.
She's afraid
Well, thank her for me, okay. Okay, well, we started the recording, so I can't mess that up. And so,
Hey, Gary.
yes.
That sounded like you've already decided on a date and time for the
Yeah,
memorial.
the celebration of life is going to be on January 31st at 4 o'clock in the afternoon here at Unity.
January 31st.
Kind of a minor miracle that the sanctuary and the room was open for New Year's Eve. I didn't think that was possible, but there it is.
And that's at Unity. Jerry,
Was that, John?
that's at Unity.
Yes, at Unity.
Okay, if there was a, it sounds like people also got some kind of a message about her life. I haven't seen that. Maybe I'm not on that list.
We're still working on that. What I want to be able to do is have the class, have the service recorded, and at the same time see if they can create a link that I can send out to people where they just click on the link and they can get a copy of the service. So I'm hoping it works that way. That's
Can
part of
they
what's.
do a Zoom? Sometimes we'll do a Zoom like they do on.
Yeah, they could do, well, they'll probably do that live as well, but this is for people who can't be there
Yeah.
necessarily. So we could just send out a link with
Yeah.
that recording. That would be really helpful to, because there's a lot of people in the Chicago area that can't make it down. So I'm hoping that they'll be able to do something like that. So if we would take a moment to the ground and center ourselves. I always find it helpful to take a couple of deep breaths consciously. Sort of drop some of that tightness that we carry around in our stomach and abdomen without even knowing it. We're always on guard. And because we are in a very safe place, it's okay to be vulnerable. The Course in Miracles reminds us that nothing of importance can be taken away from you. So just allow yourself to soften a bit. keep aware of the title of this book, The Book of Innocence. And let each one of us be teachable at this moment, that we will learn whatever it is we're supposed to be learning here this morning. I was thinking of the title of this book, The Book of Innocence. And I couldn't help thinking of Margot, who is a real innocent, not in a babyish kind of sense, but she could never understand why people would ever put themselves down. She could never understand why anybody would think negative thoughts about themselves. It just didn't make sense to her. She said, if you just think, if you're open to the idea that God loves you, how could you not be open to the idea that you could love yourself? And I can remember one time we were talking and I said, you know, I think most people in this world don't carry that thought. She said, really? I said, yeah. She said, I always thought everybody thought well of themselves because it didn't make any sense not to think well of themselves. So she talked to a social worker friend of hers named Millie. And Millie said, well, of course, everybody thinks that way. No, everybody thinks negatively about them. You know, nobody thinks they're enough. And she said it was a shock. It was a rude awakening to where so many people were coming from, because it just didn't make any sense to her. Why would anybody think bad about themselves? What do you get from that? And when she would ask that question, I said, well, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really get anything from it. Or not much. So why do it? Left me at a loss for words. Couldn't explain that one. Why would anybody want to do that? Why would anybody want to think negatively about themselves? We're on page 41, if you got a book. I'm going to read part of this first paragraph and then I'm going to comment on it because it, to me, it's a little bit wordy, a little bit, doesn't need to be as wordy as it is. Of course, that's me. And of course, everything I say is my interpretation, not yours necessarily. The personality self, you see, is reinterpreted, renown in the upper room. In other words, right now we look at our personality sometimes and think that's who we are. It exists, but in an altered state. And while your will is required for this journey to ensue, because the alignment of the will to the high will is what aligns you to each stage of your development, it is not the one that is triumphant that is personality, but the oneness that has claimed all things made new. We've said this in a number of different ways before, that our personality and our ego is a construct. It's something that you and I created around this false sense of self, false sense of who we are. Not bad, it's just not who you are. And most of us have learned through church, school, parents, relatives, friends, the world in general, that you are this personality and this ego consciousness that you created. And what comes across so often and so many times in different pieces of spiritual literature is you have a personality, you have an ego, but that's not who you are. And not only is it not who you are, is you created the whole thing in the first place. And we created it as being part of the vehicle that we use to travel through this lifetime. If I didn't have a personality and ego, we couldn't relate to one another. This would be a Quaker meeting, right? We'd sit here in silence until somebody was moved to say something, which is great. I think we ought to do that one of these times. But since we don't, we have a personality, we have an ego. And as I said, so many pieces of spiritual literature, this stuff in these Paul Selig books, Course in Miracles, Course in Love, anything you want to mention, that they will say, you have an ego, you have a personality, but it is not who you are. Who you are is a unique expression of divine consciousness. That's who you are. So it's kind of interesting. Probably need to close that door. You want to get it down? Thank you. I forgot all about that. Remember my favorite question my mother used to ask me every once in a while, especially when I was full of myself. Who do you think you are, young man? And of course, it would have been wonderful if I said, well, I'm a unique expression of divine consciousness. Who are you? Whack. But I didn't have that in my vocabulary yet. We will explain this for Paul. We have already addressed the deification of personality, meaning that we've already talked about making your personality who you really are. It's not. But the belief that you must strive or must imbibe something to have access to a higher level of consciousness is actually faulty. In other words, you don't have to do anything to get to the upper room. You don't have to find any mushrooms to get to the upper room. You don't have to get into an altered state of consciousness to be in the upper room. You're already there. I am already one with the Father. Jesus in John's gospel said, I pray that they all may be one. Really, I pray that they all may realize they are one, just as you and I are one. I know I added that piece myself, but I think that's what it meant. You're already there. There is nothing you have to do to gain my love. Nothing you can do to gain my love. It's already there. And as Paul said in Romans, there's nothing that can separate you from the love of God. Even the negative thoughts you hold about yourself, even the negativity that goes in your mind, even the negativity you hold on to, nothing, absolutely nothing can interfere with the love that is who you are. See, I think a wonderful thing that happens to us on Sunday morning, I believe for most of us, I know it does for me, is that we really, without a whole lot of effort, we live in that state of consciousness. Now, we might change that as soon as we get out of here and find out somebody's in my parking space. But for now, for the time being now, I am one with the Father, and I don't need to argue about that. I don't need to make exceptions to it. It's just there.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, I always love when you go over that, and it always resonates differently with me in terms of we don't have to do anything, or I have to do anything that. That I'm loved. I have to remember to myself, Jim, that's a period. There's no comma. There's no extra added to it. It's just, that's it. You know, like I have to jump through hoops. I don't have to do this, do that, you know, and I say that to myself And I also say that I'm enough, which is a period. There's no comma. So that's for me, that's just so freeing and very centered.
And how do you work on remaining in that state of consciousness?
Well, for Jim, what I do is maybe much like everyone who's in the room and who's on Zoom. It's a practice. It's a practice of both prayer, meditation, and affirmations. I mean, I have if you were to look in my bathroom mirror, I only have a tiny space to shave. Everything else is placard with affirmations, you know. And I just, you know, I just look at them. They're smack there in my face all the time. So that's just my reminder, man.
Cool. Thank you. Letting yourself be loved is effortless. Letting yourself be loved is effortless. Would that that were true.
Jerry.
We don't have to do anything to get there, but we have to get, maybe we have to get rid of a lot of stuff in order to be able to get there. It's like this balloon, this hot air balloon that's trying to get up, and it's like got all these sandbags attached to it. So it's not going to be able to go up in the air unless they drop the sandbags. Let go of the rock. John.
So I'm thinking about how you frequently ask us how. Or you suggest to us that we ask the question, how can I see this differently? And I'm also thinking about how I have sometimes seen things happening, or others that I love have seen things happening, and we see them through a lens of an experience we had as a child. And it's almost like not someone I love has multiple glasses. Pairs of glasses, and some are for reading, and some are for doing the dishes, and some are for driving. And so, I mean, it's just amazing how many different pairs there are, and they're all for a different purpose. And maybe it's as simple as, well, I'm looking through the wrong lens. I need to take off these glasses and put on these glasses so that I can see this more clearly and see this in a different way. Maybe there's a rose-colored pair, maybe a blue pair, maybe a green pair. I don't know, but I'm just I do think that we often see things through the pain of a childhood experience or through the joy of a childhood experience. And so I just a thought. Thanks.
Thank you, John. I remember years ago I was explaining something rather similar to that and saying that it's a choice that we make about what pair of glasses to wear. I was very limited in my consciousness back in those days, so I said, well, you know, there's this is loving lens that I can look through, and then on the other hand, I can put on my shit-colored glasses. And of course, all the world is going to look that way. And there are times when I forget those, when I forget I had the glasses on. I say, oh, I can see this differently. Oh, I did not realize. Not only did I not have my rose-colored glasses on, I had my crap-colored glasses on. And I didn't even, but I was seeing the world, that's the way I was seeing the world. And I was looking at that as being the truth. So maybe in the beginning of our class this morning, we didn't make reference to the kind of glasses you were wearing, but by saying that there's nothing that you have to do in order to be able to gain higher consciousness because it's already there. And just take that in as being the truth for a moment. Lord, one of my favorite little prayers, Lord, that I may see. May I see the way you see. Can I see through the eyes of the Christ consciousness? How, in fact, how can I see this other person, someone that I can't stand? How can I? Because I can't stand their ego and their personality. And basically, it's my ego and my personality that can't stand their ego and their personality. It has nothing to do with reality. Absolutely nothing. How can I see this person through the eyes of my deeper or higher consciousness? And how can I see myself through these eyes of higher consciousness? That's my real question.
Jerry,
Yes.
could it be that with this, when you mentioned Margot couldn't, understand why we all didn't, why so many don't love themselves, and I think very few, could that be this thing, like this statement, God is all there is, God is life, we are that element of God, and what we see because of our consciousness of where we're at is just the personality. It feels like Margot had to had sunk deeply into the true essence of herself. And that's what she saw in others. I mean, she never, of course, this she never spoke a lot, as we all, on our Zoom calls. But I always felt this true essence of her knowing her true essence.
It's shown through her and as her.
It did. So
You
I was reading a daily thing by Emmett Fox, and he on God is all. We don't realize that we are that essence of God expressing life, and we're only able, for the most part, to see the consciousness of someone.
I remember her telling me one time when she was about, said I was about 10 or 11 years old. I looked over at my parents and I realized they couldn't even take care of themselves. How could I possibly be dependent upon them to take care of me? And he said, but I realized that God is present in my life and God is taking care of me. What else do I
God
need?
in them as well.
What else do I need? Yeah, Laura.
For me, it's kind of like if I'm not enough, like I didn't have that outside of me to see that. And through Margot, it's like live like Margot. Remember the face of Margot, that experience with her. That gives me that life experience of what that is. And it's easier for me to grab onto that idea of, how can I see this differently? I can see this differently through Margot's eyes. Because that's what she saw. That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense because it's exactly what we talked about. I think we talked about it last Tuesday, but I'm not sure which class it came up in. But it was the idea or the sense that if I allow myself to be seen through higher consciousness, then I can see you in higher consciousness. Sort of rubs off, but it's an automatic response. If I see you in higher consciousness, then I can begin to see myself in higher consciousness. A little story. I was going to, wasn't planning on sharing this one, but there it is. After we were married for probably a couple of years, I fell into a deep, deep, deep dark depression. Of course, my first thought was, well, that I shouldn't have gotten married. But I realized that was not true. This was not about Margo. This was about me. And that probably getting married was the one most wonderful thing I could have done because it gave me the time and the space and the energy to be able to work through whatever it was I needed to work through. even though I still can't define it today. So I'm working through this deep, dark depression. You might call it the dark night of the soul, because I think it was. And I was working with a therapist, and basically I was looking for some sort of medication I could take to get rid of this thing. And she looked at me and kind of smiled and said, "I'm sorry, it's not one of those things that goes away like that." Oh, crap. So anyway, I'm going through this thing. And I remember one night waking up, and Margot had her hand on my back. And she was whispering, "I love you, I love you, I love you." Didn't know I was awake. And something shifted in my consciousness. The depression didn't all go away. But what I realized, or came to understand through that expression of love, was that I have a depression, but I am not a depression. It's not who I am. I can't tell you anything else about that, but I know it's not who I am. Saved my life.
So, Jerry,
I
hope this is relevant. This has got me thinking about all kinds of good stuff. I'm remembering back when I was a consultant, and I was working as part of a team, and we would work with Fortune 100 companies to build a new vision and move creatively into the future. And so we would have 50 to 100 participants come in for 3 days. And one of the first things we had to do was shake them out of whatever, whatever their current state of mind was. And so we had a series of exercises that we would have them do. And one of the principles that we worked with was you can't plan the future from now, from where you are, but you can from the future. So we would have them, as an example, each of them create a vision of how successful this project had been a year from now, and what their role had been in it, and what had happened, and what had been done. And that would kick these three-day sessions off, and people would, but it was true that if we said, "What are you going to do?" they had no idea. But if it was set in the future, a year from now, you're going to be interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, and they want to know why this was so successful and what you'd done. From the future perspective, you could come back and you come up with all these ideas, and they would share these with each other. And we had all kinds of ways of working with this. But this totally changed how they were looking at things. So I'll give you a couple of quick examples. One company we were working with, they were losing market share in breakfast cereals, happened to be Kellogg's. What they did was invent the breakfast bar, the idea of the breakfast bar at that meeting. Another company came in and they wanted us to work with them to reinvent their media operation. They owned all these television stations and radio stations. And what they ended up doing at the end of the 3 days, they decided to sell all of those media operations and focus on their insurance company, which is Liberty Mutual. So, I mean, we can do all kinds of things if we simply stop existing or thinking and focusing at the level we're at and look out into the future and say, okay, it's a year from now. How am I different? How is this different? What did I do that made a difference? Just a thought. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I remember when I was first talking about this, or first thinking about being in the being in the upper room, being in a higher state of consciousness. The image that came to mind was imagine that you're in a shopping mall, and it's a holiday season. So it's rather frenetic. People running around and carrying bags, doing this, doing that, rushing around, doing this, doing that. And you want to get a cup of coffee, And the line in Starbucks is about a half mile long, but you get in line anyway, and you're getting pushed around. Feel like, this line is never going to end. Then all of a sudden you see that there's a doorway that leads to an elevator. You say, I wonder what that's all about. You go to the elevator and you get on it, and it goes up to the second or third floor. And you get out, and you get out of the elevator, and you're standing on sort of a balcony, and you're looking down at all of this frenetic activity, but you're not a part of it anymore. You're separate from that. That's not who I am. And you're able to breathe a little bit more clearly, and even say to yourself, well, I'm going to go down to the first floor again, but I'm going to go down to the first floor with a whole different attitude and a whole different way of looking at things. It's
So,
that, I believe it's that simple, but also that profound. When we come together here on Sunday morning, I don't think any one of us necessarily says, okay, well, I'm gonna be in the upper room, I'm gonna be in a higher state of consciousness on Sunday morning, walking in here, sitting here, being with these other people. But it happens. It happens because you are open to it. It happens because you are aware of the oneness that does exist. It happens easily, it happens without effort. All you do is push a couple of buttons and there you are. Isn't that interesting? Here I am. I am in a higher state of consciousness thanks to you. You are in a higher state of consciousness thanks to me. There's nothing we need to do differently. When we were having classes like this in the old Unity Church, in the chapel, which was a great room, what was so interesting about that was that we would come in there, almost automatically, you would come in the doorway. And you would consciously, or maybe even unconsciously sometimes, just let go of all of the stuff that's going on in your mind or going on in your head and leave it at the door and walk in. And it was like an atmospheric change. Something happened to each one of us walking into that space and being aware of the oneness that exists.
Jerry, I just wanted to say, I know that you used to do breath work, and sometimes I can't change my thinking with my thinking. Just a brief return to the focusing on the breath allows a new perspective to bloom. If I can but remember to drop the tug of war, to drop the trying to process, and just take, gosh, sometimes even 30 seconds of in and out. And it's, I don't know, it does something. So if I can just remember to return to that breath, sometimes these new perspectives and the love of self kind of comes in automatically. I'm breathing oxygen, which is loving. Something as simple as that can help. It does me.
Along with those same lines, Greg, one of the things that it mentions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous said, we learned how to pause when agitated. Just pausing for a moment. And adding the breath to that. Pause for a moment, breathe deeply, soften. And then we begin to realize, oh, I have a choice. I don't have to get sucked into whatever negativity my mind is creating. I have a choice, the image that we've been using here, of what kind of glasses I need to put on or can put on. But I only realize that if I'm willing to, or if I'm able to stop and breathe, say, oh, thank you. Not only have I let go of something, but I have a choice of where I go the next minute or the next 5 minutes. Yeah, Laura.
That pausing for me is that I'm generally not in the present moment. So that pause. That breath brings me back to right now, and there is really nothing going on right now. And if I do that, then I have that clarity to choose again.
That's a great way of putting it. Pausing, stopping, breathing consciously puts us in the now moment. And we realize in the now moment, all that shit that I was worried about or creating in my mind just isn't there. Let me finish this one paragraph and we'll do our meditation. I could leave a little bit early this morning. We have already addressed the deification of personality, but the belief that you must strive or must imbibe something to have access to a higher level of consciousness is actually faulty. You may have those experiences, but they must be utilized in a high way, or they operate merely as experience and not instruction. In other words, you're experiencing, but you don't learn anything from it. You may learn instruction by walking headway into a door, or you may understand the door needs to be open, or you may continue to bang your head. Unless you realize that the door opens, the experience of bumping one's head has not been very meritful. I don't know whether I shared this with you last week or not, but that reminded me of the beginning of the book, Winnie the Pooh. Starts off by saying, "Here comes Edward Bear down the steps, thump, thump, thump on the back of his head. He thinks there must be another way to come down the stairs if he could just stop thumping long enough to figure out what it is." Stop, thump, thump. Here's Jerry coming down the stairs, thump, thump, thump on the back of his head. He thinks there must be another way to come down the stairs if you could only stop thumping long enough to figure out what it is. What a great image. Stop thumping. Stop for a moment. Breathe. Center. Soften. I'm going down the stairs. I can do that the hard way, or I can do that the easy way. I can hold on to the banister. I can take it one step at a time because that's all I can do anyway. And I can do that gently. I don't have to be in a hurry. In fact, I could be very zen about this. I'm walking down the stairs. Step one. Step two. Step three. Step four. Pause. Breathe. In the moment. Now. You can put your book down. Take a couple of breaths. Close your eyes if you like. Notice if there's any stiffness or hardness about you that might have crept in. That body armor we put down is especially present in our stomach and abdominal area. Not a judgment, just an awareness. Can I breathe into that? Can I allow it to soften? Can I recognize that the state of consciousness that I am in this moment doesn't have to be labeled? I don't even have to label as being higher or lower consciousness. The state of consciousness I am in this moment is effortless. I did not have to do anything to get here. I just opened myself up to what's already here, what's already present. in the now moment. What would it be like if I walked this way for the rest of the day, or let's say, just say for the rest of the morning? And if I find myself getting caught up in fear or worry or doubt or anger or judgment, that I recognize that and I stop for a moment and I breathe and I release and I open myself up to the present moment of consciousness, where everything is just the way it's supposed to be. I am loved. I am free. I am teachable. I am loved. I am free. I am teachable. There's nothing else I need to do. Nowhere else I need to go. I am free. I am free. I am free. Get in touch with the rhythm of your breathing. That movement of the universe, open, close, breath in, breath out. The beating of your heart, contraction, relaxation, contraction, relaxation. Now we are all moving towards the One. We are all walking one another home. And stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Any closing thoughts before we end this morning?
My thoughts are with you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Holding you in prayer, and I still feel the essence of Margot.
Yeah, where did she go?
She didn't.
She didn't. I remember Ram Dass talking one time about when his guru died, named Kruli Baba. And his followers were wailing and ripping their clothes and throwing ashes on their head and crying and wailing and weeping. And he said, where did he go? He didn't have a body anymore. He didn't go anyplace. Right here. How could he not be right here? How could she not be right here?
Her calmness pervades. It filters into me.
So let us be grateful. Let us be thankful.
Yes.
Let us be loving. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
See you next week, if not sooner. Take good care of yourselves.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry.
Take good care of one another.
Thank you, Jerry.
Love you.
Thanks, Jerry.